Dr. Donnelly, let's go live. Let's talk to the audience for a second. We're going to be talking about empathy and understanding are the bridges that connect different generations, fostering a society where wisdom and innovation coalesce. When one generation fails to respect or understand the other, these bridges crumble, leading to rifts that can manifest as social division, stagnation, and even conflict. Now, let me introduce Dr. Kristen Donnelly, a luminary in the field of intergenerational empathy and communication, with a deep background that encompasses sociology, workplace dynamics, and familial structures. Kristen Donnelly offers a wealth of knowledge aiming at helping each generation understand the next and the previous. Her insights illuminate the intricate fabric of generational perspectives, reminding us that empathy is not just a personal virtue, but a collective necessity. So sit back, relax, grab a snack, and let's have some talk about generations. Here we go. Kristen Donnelly, I love that you are here today. And everybody, this is A Funny Way of Looking, where diverse voices meet open minds. And we're live every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You can find us at A Funny Way of Looking or all places that you have your favorite podcasts. We're out there every place. So how are you doing, Kristen?
I'm fantastic, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. I may have to grab some water today because my voice is a little raggedy today. But I will be talking to you, and I'll make signs and stuff. And
we'll make it work good. Any way we have to. Yeah,
it's going to work. Hardest question of the day, and I promise this will be the hardest question. Who do you want to do a shout out to?
Thankfully, it's easy for me because the other half of my professional brain is my business partner. Her name is Dr. Erin Hinson, and she is, we are the two people that make up Abby Research, the kind of front facing of us. Okay. So all the research that I'll talk about today, sometimes I'll use the word we, and we means Erin and myself. We have some incredible back office folks, Eleanor and Jamie and some other people like that. But Erin and I are the front facing duo that conduct this research and figure out the implications.
So you're not talking about the royal we, it's actually just
I am not. No, just me and Erin. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Let's jump into this topic because I seriously loved talking with you in the pre-warm up and just like learning about all this stuff and participation trophies and understanding, you know, how people think. So just for context, let's back it up and talk to us about the pivotal moment in your life when it first sparked your interest in the subject, you know, in empathy and advocacy work.
It's fascinating. I don't actually think there was a moment for the simple fact that my family, like our family culture has always been about other people and understanding other people and serving other people. And so I remember like in high school, for instance, and even in middle school a little bit too, every Thanksgiving, my dad and mom would wake us up really early and we would drive around a part of the city of Philadelphia that we didn't know or weren't a part of. And they would really intentionally have us think about what life would look like if we lived there. What did life look like for people who did live there? Why do we think that people did live there? And these were conversations I was happening as an early teenager and through my teenage years. And so the option to, I don't know if there was an option to not be into advocacy, empathy, mm-hmm. and such things. So I mean, I went on, I have a master's in social work, and that was a really natural fit. My PhD is in sociology, which is the study of how people work together and interact together kind of as big groups and also individuals within groups. And all of that, I think, was really programmed by how my parents raised my brother and I, which was always to leave someone better than you found them, whatever that looked like for them.
Were there actual like generational gaps in your family, that you had to deal with, maybe like multi-generations?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, my parents were boomers. My brother and I are millennials. Okay. I wouldn't have articulated it that way at all. But the way that we actually see it the most is now that my brother and I have taken over our father's company, the generation gap in leadership and how we run the company versus how he ran the company, which are very generational priorities and generational patterns. I see that really strongly now. But when I look at all of the, when Aaron and I look at all of the patterns among the generational research, we can see our lives a lot in the data about millennials raised by boomers and kind of what those tendencies tend to be. And versus like Gen X raised by the silent generation and, you know, Gen Z raised by Gen X and kind of all of those, the helixes of how we all kind of run together that way. So, but yeah, when I was younger, I wouldn't have told you I saw that. But now looking back, I can see the patterns.
Do me a favor. Let's talk about the generations and what they're called and maybe basic years that where they are.
Sure.
I don't think we're going to go back any further than boomers. What came before boomers? Was that the great generation?
The silent generation.
Silent generation.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Or the great generation. But the silent generation is, they tend to be called that because they were taught, like you can call them the stoic generation. Like they were taught not to speak about their feelings or their inner lives or anything like that.
Okay.
And were very much taught by their parents, taught by society to do that. We don't have a lot of data on them as younger people because we didn't really start studying generations until the boomers.
Okay.
The boomers are named for the baby boom that happened after World War II. Generally, it's from 50 to 65. If you were born in that range, can be a little younger because boomers really are 45 to 65. Like that generation's pretty solid. Then after that, there are about 15-year age gaps. So after boomers, we had Gen X. So anybody born from 1965 to 1980. And they were named that by, I believe, Time Magazine. And Gen X kind of, because they didn't really care, they were seen as really, you know, cynical and kind of like, you know, out, not really caring as they were coming of age. So that was the name everybody gave them.
Okay.
Then millennials are 1985 to 1995, and we came of age in the new millennium as the millennium was turning.
Okay.
We were originally called Gen Y.
That's weird. Yeah. Then, what happened to them? Yeah, good point.
We were called Gen Y, and then once again, Time Magazine. Back the Time Magazine of yore, which used to do investigative reporting and doesn't anymore. But they were like, no. Like they're all packaged around the millennium. So then Gen Z, we just went ahead and went back to letters, is 1995 to 2010. And then Gen Alpha is 2010 to 2025. And we don't know what it'll be after that.
Gotcha.
So they're kind of those chunks. And generations tend to be marked by something significant that happened in their adolescence, a thing that they all kind of experienced in their adolescence and childhood. So one of the things for millennials, for instance, is that we were, you know, early elementary up to early college of when 9/11 happened. Oh. And so those are kind of a very different experience than if you were an adult when 9/11 happened and what that kind of looks like. And so we talk about huge moments, cultural moments that shaped how a generation sees something. Obviously, for both Alpha and Gen Z, it's going to be COVID lockdowns are huge things that will need to be said. But for Gen Z, it's also and millennials both, it's also the 08 economic recession affects how they kind of see the world because they were developmental ages when that happened. So that's kind of like for boomers, it was for a lot of them, it was the Korea and Vietnam Wars.
Okay.
And how that kind of looked. For Gen X, it would have been, for some of them, the Gulf War. Huge moments that mark pieces of your growing up and how you were affected by that giant thing that happened while you were growing up.
Are there like pieces or people who are stuck between the two generations, like between Gen X and boomers and boomers? Gen X, Gen
Y. And there are people who are millennials who much more personally behave like they are Gen X or who behave like they're Gen Z. Like, these are gross generalizations and they're huge buckets of people. And just because I react one way as being born in 1983 does not mean that somebody else born in 1983 is going to see certain things the same way. The reason that these are convenient to study is that, to be frank, they're the least emotional grouping, a way to group people that we can study. So there's not a lot of personal emotions tied around what year you were born necessarily. Okay. And so we can have the conversation. It's like, well, you were born in 1972. You have no control over that. You have no choices about it. This is what data kind of says you'll think about, you might think about the world. These are the things that happened at certain developmental markers. Does this feel right to you? No? Okay, that's fine. It feels right to other people that were born in your same kind of year. When you get into other conversations, other kind of categorizations of people that social scientists study, those emotions become a lot more present.
Okay.
And from a data perspective, this is just a data perspective, emotions make data difficult to collect.
Yeah.
And so they make stories, you have to do a lot more layers to uncover storytelling without, to uncover memories that aren't full of emotions, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so we like to start with generational conversations, and then you get into other intersections, gender and sexuality and ability level and socioeconomic status and all of those that also then make up a person.
Okay.
But if you understand generations as the entry point, we find some of those other conversations are easier.
So I'm conflicted where to start this conversation because people kind of know where the generations are. They know that you've got all the ones that we just talked about. But I think where they show up a lot and people get run over by them is either in family or workplace. So
oh, for sure.
Which one of those should we start with, family or workplace? And how, because we've got to get to participation trophies. We got to get to work ethic. We got to get to all this cool stuff. So why don't we start with how generations were brought up, and then we'll talk about the workplace next. Okay. So
okay.
Go, you start on this one, because I just want to understand how they're all cooperating or not in the workplace.
Okay, so the couple things to know is, again, data on this is really recent. So, you know, we knew the baby boomers were happening, obviously, like you just look at population growth, but people like actively studying them wasn't until they were already in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, to be honest. Like it wasn't like that really got there. There is data out there, don't get me wrong, but in terms of like enough data to make research findings, mm-hmm. it didn't really start until millennials were children. So okay. It didn't really start. It started during Gen X, it started during boomers, but like the giant grants to study generations at universities and things like that, the way that they became ubiquitous, like you could very easily, like, not everybody might have known Gen X, but all of a sudden everybody knew the word millennial. You know what I mean? So the ubiquitousness really wasn't until millennial. There's a lot of really great data from boomers and Xers for sure. Do not get me wrong. We got overloaded with it once we hit millennials. So the story I kind of tell is that the differences between boomer patterns of parenting and Gen X patterns of parenting. When I was in my early 20s, I worked at a university. So this was in the mid 2000s. And okay. So this would have been, I'm an elder millennial. So this is when younger millennials, mid millennials were in college. So this is boomers raising these kids. And younger boomers, but still boomers, maybe some older Gen X, but like in that bucket. And so that pocket of people were what we called helicopter parents, because they hovered.
Wait,
and
so,
this was very different.
Did you say that the boomers were raising the millennials?
Millennials.
Not
boomers raised millennials.
So they skipped.
Boomers raised millennials. Mm-hmm.
Okay, boomers raised millennials. Gen X raises Gen Y?
Z.
Gen
Z. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So boomers to millennials, X to Z.
X to Z, and then
millennials are raising alphas,
which aren't really, there's nothing there yet, except
parents. There's no data, because do you want us to study your children? Probably not. So they tend to, you know, they tend to wait for a little while. So
okay.
I mean, if you think about it, like if they're 15-year gaps, are there some Xers that parented millennials? Sure, but we're talking about patterns here, mm-hmm. like giant like huge national patterns. So in the national pattern for, you know, millennials is that we had helicopter parents who hovered a lot. They were active in, they were more active in our lives than their parents were active in theirs. They were, you know, very much tried. They were super involved in things. This is when you start to get the stereotypes of the PTA mom and the soccer mom, mm-hmm. And the dad screaming on the sidelines of sports. Like all of that starts. All of that starts when millennials were kids.
Okay.
And so it goes up. So we call them helicopter parents. We'd get emails asking if we could track down their child on campus. Every once in a while, you'd get parents emailing about grades. It was rare, but it was enough that we were talking about it, and it was annoying because we would say there's this law that means we can't actually, your child is a legal adult, whether you want to admit that or not. I'm sorry.
At what age?
But like, we can't tell you at 18. Once they turn 18 and they go to a college,
gotcha.
We can't, there's a federal law that means that universities can't disclose things to their parents because universities are parents in absentia. So like, I can't tell you if your kid has been going to class. I can't tell you what your kid's grades are. I can't legally. And we want that to happen. That's a good law for a lot of reasons. We want FERPA to stand. So, but it was every once in a while, it was annoying. We talked about helicopter parents. We discussed it as, you know, youth work and higher ed professionals. But what we have now instead is lawnmower parents. And what, instead of hovering, they have been bulldozing and solving problems for their children.
And what's,
so they've just been mowing over. So that is what X are lawnmower parents to Gen Z.
X, got it. Okay.
And what the data is telling us is that because X was a lot of latchkey kids, they didn't have parents really involved at all. They've kind of course corrected it. Everybody pendulum swings, let me tell you that. How you are raised, you tend to swear you're gonna raise your kid completely differently. Like how you had this experience, I'm gonna do something completely differently. So humanity tends to pendulum swing a lot between extremes. Mm-hmm. It's just something we do as people. So X were latchkey kids a lot. They like, you know, didn't really, their parents didn't know where they were. This is the generation where the commercials went on at 11 p.m. that said, do you know where your children are? Uh-huh. And it was an earnest question. So all those kids are now raising kids and they're like, oh no, I will know where my child is at all times.
So who
I will
who
be
is
so involved in my parents' lives.
Who's raising the Gen X's? Because it's not the boomers. It's the
silent generation.
Okay. Silent generation is the ones
that raise the Xers.
Raising the Xs, boomers are raising the...
And like older boomers, like it's where it gets a little bit complicated at that point.
Yeah.
So you just talk about years. People who were parenting in the 70s, that's how this was kind of done. People who parented in the 70s, parenting in the 70s looked like this. It looked like, do you know where your kids are? That's what it looked like. And so the general reaction when we do national data now is to always know where your kids are. There's an app called Life 360, if you don't know about this, that a lot of families use now, where you can know where your child is at all times.
Hmm.
All times.
You put a leash on them or something, or some kind of GPS?
GPS on their phones.
Oh, okay, on their phones.
And it's an app on their phones. It goes in their Apple Watches, from what I understand, too. And a lot of our college students say that their parents have it on them still while they're in college.
Wow. Okay.
That is a very different experience than when I was in college, where I just told my parents my schedule every semester so they would know when I cannot pick up the phone because I'm not in my dorm.
Right.
That's it. They just wanted to know when they could get a hold of me if they had to. That's a whole different experience. I told my dad about Life 360 and he's like, that is too much information. I don't need to know where you are all the time. But that is not the case for a lot of my college students' parents who perceive safety and perceive good parenting as knowing where their kids are, as making their kids' lives as easy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some problems with that when we get into both family and workplace. Is that if you as an adolescent have had all of your problems solved for you, you have no practice in solving problems. You have no practice in figuring things out. You have no practice in adulting.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so they get, so they show up, we combine that with, we know statistically, again, statistics and data and patterns. So if you're like, I don't act like this, amazing. Mazel tov, delighted for you. These are just national patterns. What we know now is that the kids in college now are less likely to have had a job before college than previous generations.
Okay.
So if they're less likely to have a job before college, there's a bunch of reasons for that. And then it's possible that every early career person that walks into an office, that could be their very first job. Statistically, that was rarer in previous generations. So this is where some of these shifts happen that are both family and work culture, and they blend really significantly. Because if you weren't given practice making decisions, making mistakes, screwing up at home in the safety, if you have a safe home, in the safety of your home, then in an environment that feels much higher stakes, like I mess up, I could get fired. I mess up, I could fail out of college. It's even less likely that you're willing to make any mistake. Or you know how to get out of a mistake once you've made it. So this is where like family and work kind of blend together in that way.
Gotcha. So you've got, who is in the workplace right now, the majority? It's boomers are getting out.
Boomers are, the majority of people in leadership positions are Gen X and millennials, except I say that, and boomers keep raising their own retirement age. So we still have a good number of boomers in national leadership positions We did not anticipate that happening, but it's boomers, millennials, boomers, Xers, millennials, and Gen Z. The oldest Gen Z is 28 years old.
Okay.
So that's still a good chunk of people in the workforce. They're not teenagers. You know, the younger ones are college students, the middle to younger ones, but they're 28. They're scraping 30. That's adulthood.
Okay. Which generations in the workplace get along in general, and which ones don't get along in general?
So that's such an interesting question. I don't have a lot of data on that. I haven't seen that data. So this is a lot of stories and vibes, I should say. But the kind of, when I travel the country and Aaron and I travel the country and we talk to people, people tend to be bumfuddled by Gen Z. All three other generations are bumfuddled by Gen Z. They have a real hard time understanding motivations, behaviors, everything else. When I talk to Xers and millennials, they have a very hard time with boomers, but they don't have a hard time with each other. We don't have patterned data, you know, from 100 years ago, but my gut just tells me the two outliers never get along as well as the two middle ones will, because they're so mixed up and they'll have to get along. And you hit your mid-20s to your mid-40s and leadership gets really flexible, leadership roles, like where you kind of move around. So my guess is that in 30 years, we'll see a similar pattern where the two are outliers, the middle two are enmeshed, mm-hmm. but I could be totally wrong. I will say that the gap between millennials and Gen Z is larger than the cultural gap between any of the other ones, any of the other three generations who kind of bleed into each other. There is a much more, if you are somebody who behaves statistically like a Gen Z, regardless of when you're born, if you're on the upper edge of it, there will be a lot of differences between somebody who statistically behaves like a millennial.
Okay.
And there's a whole host of reasons for that we can get into. But in terms of getting along, I actually just had a conversation yesterday. I did this presentation at a conference, and I had an afterwards talking to people, all the questions about how do I get someone to understand that they have to be kind to people? How do I help my boss understand that he can't just yell at people and expect them to stay?
Right.
Those questions were all about boomers. They happen to be all about boomers.
That is really interesting. Now, why do the boomers get this, like, what is it that everybody says, okay, boomer, you know, is it that they think boomers don't understand? Because I think boomers understand, but they don't understand the way that the younger generation understands. Is that right?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm not sure if Boomers were not raised to seek understanding of people different than them. That was not the world around them. That's not how they were raised. They were not raised in leadership positions in companies to entertain other people's ideas necessarily. It was a much more dictatorial leadership style. It was much more Wall Street and corporate, and I am the end. I am the be all and end all. And there was a lot less education in schools, for sure. In schools, for sure, about difference. Because my mom and dad and I were talking about this once, and my mom and dad said, remember, we grew up in the Red Scare. Anything that was different was suspect. Anything that was different was going to kill us. That's what we were taught. And that's an exaggeration. And I don't think that that's exactly, but that is, if that's their perception, and I don't think they're alone, that's a real thing for a lot of boomers. A lot of people in that generational gap were not given the tools in their young adulthood to engage with difference the same way, and Xers are the same way that millennials and Gen Z have been given those tools to engage with people different than them.
Okay.
It's about tools. So I don't know if they understand, because I don't know if they've been ever taught to.
That is really interesting. Like, you and I had a conversation about the formation of this prefrontal cortex and people.
Yeah.
And I was asking you questions about, like, is it really a brain thing or an experience thing? Or how is it that teenagers don't understand risk? They just go for it because risk is part of, like, growing up. What is the deal there?
Oh, they just don't have that. The part of their brain, the prefrontal cortex, the part of their brain that tells them the world is not all about you. You are, in fact, mortal. And this breakup will not actually, like, end your life. those kind of three right. things. That develops in our 20s, really. And hormones are just a wild thing. I mean, the more I learn about hormones and everything else, the more I realize that, like, really impulsive decisions when people were first humans and the average lifespan was what, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. You wanted a lot of impulsive people because then they would procreate and not think about how this could kill them. Like, you wanted impulsive people. We don't need that much impulse. Our hormones have not evolved the way that society has. But that's the answer, is their brains aren't fully cooked yet. Your brain isn't fully cooked until your mid to late 20s most of the time. And so you're going to see the world differently. Then we haven't even gotten into that some people never fully cook, or that there's trauma that happens that changes people's brain chemistry, or, like, brains are crazy, crazy beautiful things. They are wild and understudied because that's just how life works. But there are some elements of Gen Z right now that are just, this is how 20-year-olds behave, and everybody take a deep breath and it'll be fine. Like, you didn't like a 9-to-5 job either when you first started. You just didn't have the internet to complain about it. Like, take a deep breath, it'll be okay. But then there are other things that are distinctly them, the same way that millennials, when we were in college and we got mocked a lot, mm-hmm. there were things that were us in our 20s and things that were distinctly millennial. And it's that kind of thing. And I should say very clearly too, I deeply believe that people can change. My entire life is staked on the fact that people can change. They can change their minds. They can change their behaviors. You can do the work to rewrite your brain. My entire career is staked on that. And my personal life is centered around that.
Okay.
And you can rewrite your patterns with curiosity and hard work. You totally can. So if you are somebody who was born in 1947 and who has lived a life where nearly everybody around you thinks like you, is the same religion as you, has the same social values as you, and now all of a sudden you have a child with different values, different religion, different political, different whatever, as a human being, you have the capacity to say, to curious and ask your child, I wonder why. Mm-hmm. Or you have the capacity to say, I will cut that child out of my life. We know this story. We all have friends in either one of those situations. We know this story. Those are choices that we get to make. as more and more as younger generations get older and have children, a lot of us were given more tools in college, in life, through TikTok, to ask more questions of our children and assume less things. It is not fair of us as younger generations to assume that everybody has the same education. That is unfair.
Yeah. And so what do we do so that the generations can get along and understand each other?
Man, that's the $64,000 question. I mean, the simple answer is you hire me and Aaron to come in and teach you how to do it.
That's awesome. That might be it. You know,
that's the best advice I can ever offer on how to get along with people is to ask more questions and make less assumptions. That's it. You can understand people.
That?
Oh yeah, no, we don't do that. As humans, we don't do that. The piece that's really important in here is that we tend to think as human beings that to understand somebody means we have to agree with them. Mm-hmm. And that is the farthest thing from the truth. You can understand somebody without condoning their opinions, actions, or ideas. So you seek understanding, you ask a whole lot more questions than you do, and that's it. So the example I use a lot for understanding is Vladimir Putin, bless his cotton socks. So Vlad is not a publicly complicated dude.
Okay.
He has very clearly stated that he believes his purpose on the planet is to regain every inch of land the Soviet Union used to own. Mm-hmm. This is not a secret. He said it. He said it many times. So he invades Ukraine. And there's all these people on TV clutching hands and like clutching their pearls and wondering why they're doing it. And I'm like, but he said why he's doing it. You can say that he's wrong and you think it's awful and it's abhorrent and it's terrible, but he said why he was doing it. He's okay. Not going to give up because he said why he was doing it. So that's kind of what I'm saying. I disagree with him. Vehemently, okay. That land is not his, that he's not personally in charge of restoring the Soviet Union. People have their sovereign right to their sovereign land. Like, I think it's nonsense, but uh-huh. It's true for him.
And so he tries to surround himself with people who are aligned with what he's thinking so that he can
just becomes confirmation bias. Yep.
Okay.
Or what he's happens? So powerful that people are terrified to say no to him, which is another distinct possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing that helps is if you kill all your enemies, which he is certainly rumored to do. But that's a large example, but like a smaller personal one is I am in a cross-cultural marriage. My husband is Northern Irish. And there are, I don't know, on any given day, 6 to 10 things he does that I do not get. Like, I just don't understand. And that's a little bit less now. We've been together for almost 12 years. But uh-huh. There's so many times that I'll just sit there and I'll be like, I think that's a very Northern Irish thing. I don't understand why I don't agree with this thought process. Uh-huh. I wish you would think a different way, but I can understand that that's where it came from. That's why he thinks this thing. That's why he does this thing.
So let's talk about that just for a second.
Or I can sit there and be mad.
Right. You can be mad or you can figure out how to negotiate things. And in business, in family, in life, there are things that people believe and they're not able to see the other person's point of view.
Correct.
What happens then when we kind of know what happens? It gets really nasty. But how do you resolve that? Because everyone thinks they're right.
Both parties have to be willing to negotiate in good faith. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, somebody will be hurt.
Okay.
So part of my answer always is going to be that you can't control other people. You cannot control what they're going to do. You can't control what they're going to think or see. All you really have control over is yourself, your own reactions, your motivations, your articulation, how you communicate. So this is one of the reasons that therapy is so important, is that therapists can teach you what you kind of how to discover all of those things about yourself and how to articulate those things to another person in a way that does not make it seem like an attack.
Okay.
Which is very, very important. But yeah, negotiations in good faith are really the only way this moves forward to anything other than some sort of cyclical stalemate.
So how do you do that in interpersonal relationships?
Yeah. What, negotiate in good faith?
No, well, you can negotiate in good faith, but in the end, unless you've convinced the other person that your Gen X way is right and Gen Z is wrong, or parts of it are right and parts of it are wrong, how do you then ever come to a, how do you ever make things better?
You all agree on what better means. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of discussion because there are things that Gen Z brings to the workforce and to families that I think are beautiful and amazing. They ask much more piercing questions than other generations have because of their access to social media and their access to the globe. They ask uncomfortable questions, which I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. They are much more into bodily autonomy and making sure that their rights are respected than other generations have been. These are all things we need. These are all things that are needed in the workforce and that are really, really helpful. What they're not great at is understanding some of the cultural patterns of work that they might need to come into. They're also, because they're babies, they don't have that formed thing, believe that how they see the world is the only way to see the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, when you were in your 20s, didn't you want absolutely everybody to agree with everything you thought? Like, that's just being in your 20s. So some of it is older, wiser mentors listening a whole bunch and just like listening to the rants and the questions and whatever and saying, okay, so I hear what you're saying. This thing that you asked for, we can't do. Mm-hmm. We can't afford it. It's not feasible. It's not part of the culture. This other thing over here is a really good idea. Can you help me do this one thing and be patient on the other thing and also just accept that your way isn't the highway? Can we work together to create a new better?
Yeah.
And if the person says no, I just remind them that not every job is for everybody.
What do you do with parents when you can be a parent and you know if the kid touches that stove, it's going to be hot? Do you let them touch the stove or do you tell them don't do it? Or you just go like, yeah, I think that's a bad idea and let them do it anyway? What do you do? And that's the parent thing. But then there's also the bigger workplace issues, world issues that come after that. How do you handle those?
So I should say I'm not a parent. I've just studied human development a lot. And my answer to that is just somebody who has studied human development and not somebody who has lived these things, is that if it's not going to cause irreparable traumatic damage, you let them do the thing.
Okay.
You let them do the thing that is developmentally appropriate and all those kind of things. Like, I don't know. I think I was telling you this in the pre-show. My niece and nephew are 4 and 2.
Okay.
So there are things that my brother and sister-in-law tell them not to do now that I think maybe in a couple of years they'll let them make that mistake on their own. But right now, absolutely, the 2-year-old should not touch the oven. He should be told, do not put that in your mouth. He should be told, don't hit your sister. We don't hit people. We don't do that. Like, there are much more declarative statements when kids are younger. Mm-hmm. As they get a little bit older, there's times that we might be willing to let them make their own mistake. As a boss, there is definitely times I have let my employees make mistakes that I know will not irreparably harm the company or irreparably harm them, but they need to see what it feels like to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. They need to see what it feels like. Like, I won't correct a thing because I can see where it's going because I've made that same mistake. But I also know that it won't really do that much damage, except they'll be a little bit embarrassed, which is terrible. But we all can use some embarrassment sometimes to keep us from not doing the thing again. So I'm not going to stop them, because also if somebody stops you, you're probably going to be like, what do they know?
Right.
I'm smarter than that person. That's one of the, like, that's one of the things we think of people. I understand this better than they do. So, you know.
But there are the people
who've been there, done that. Judgment calls are real
hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, what do you do when your company puts a Gen Zer in a management position managing boomers and Gen Xers? Because the boomers and Gen Xers are like, yep, we know this is going to screw up. the boss who's making the decisions hasn't seen it happen, what happens then?
So in my perfect world, you would never do that without a lot of clear communication.
Yeah.
So the people that they're going to be supervising better know why that person got hired, better know what like interests or innovations or ideas got them the job. They better know all of those things. If you just smack somebody down in the middle of an organization like that and don't provide any context, you are asking for failure as a boss or an owner.
Gotcha.
You have to clearly communicate why you have made this specific decision and how you think this dynamic will improve the company outcomes.
Let me ask you this. AI is really the thing these days, right? And everyone's talking about, do we need to rein it in? And what is the morality that it's going to possess and all this sort of stuff? Who makes that decision? The Gen Z and the younger generation, because they're going to be using it more, or the older people, the boomers and the Gen Xers, make the decisions about how.
I don't know. I hope somebody does, because I think it's terrifying and does need to be reined in. I mean, the people who control the money are who makes the decisions. So whatever organization you're in, whoever could like follow the money, whoever controls the purse strings is who makes the decisions when it comes to AI. So I don't know. Culturally, I would imagine it's going to be Xers and millennials, because they're the ones in charge of things like, I mean, we already see Sarah Silverman suing for that AI can't be intellectual property. You know, she's an Xer. So I think it's going to be Xers and millennials, since they have a lot of media and cultural control right now, that are going to be the ones leading the way on making sure. Ironically, the people I know that are the most excited about it are actually boomers, who think it's really cool. And more in Xers and millennials and Gen Z have done things like technology ethics and have seen this go badly and have had their work stolen and all those kind of things, that the when you've had your work stolen by AI, it gets real personal. It gets real personal real fast.
Yes, I can see that.
And so, I mean, I have friends whose entire novels, their entire intellectual properties have been stolen by generative AI. And it's, my parents don't know anybody who has, but when I tell them that, they're like, oh my gosh, no, it should absolutely be banned.
Interesting. Yeah, we should do another whole show on ethics of AI. I'll get that.
Oh, there are much smarter people than me to talk about that. Much smarter people.
Well, there's the human side of it too. We'll get you on a panel and we'll all just go back and forth with it. I could talk to you for another several hours, but I'm going to do something now a little different. Well, it's the same for all of our shows. I want to play a little game with you right now called This or That. And I'm going to ask you a question. I'll give you two choices. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. And how the questions come across to you is how you answer them. It's not like my interpretation. I'm just going to give you words and you string them together however your mind does. Okay?
Okay.
So let's start with some easy questions. They'll get maybe a little more difficult as we go. But let's see where it happens. Remote work or office?
Office.
Okay. For who?
I mean, you told me I couldn't answer both, but the true answer is hybrid. That's the true answer. So office more for Gen Zers who need to integrate into a workplace culture.
Okay. For professional networking, LinkedIn or Facebook?
LinkedIn.
Baby boomers, hard work or work smart?
Hard work.
Okay. What about Gen X, grunge or hip hop?
Grunge.
Yeah. For Gen X also, hard work or smart, or work smart?
Work smarter.
Okay. I think we all need to do some more smart working. Smarter working. Millennials, avocado toast or student loans?
Loans.
Okay. Gen Z, TikTok or YouTube?
Which one do they do more? TikTok.
TikTok.
No. I'll take that back. The most recent data says YouTube. So YouTube. Okay.
Yeah, I think YouTube could be even more amazing than what it already is if people just understood it more, instead of just thinking you could throw out a video and something might happen to it.
Participation
trophies. I love this topic with different people. Boost self-esteem or promote mediocrity?
Boost self-esteem.
Okay. Explain that. Because I know there's people who are watching, they're going like, how can you possibly say that? And there is a tribe out there for promote mediocrity.
So what you've really done is promote anxiety when you've done participation trophies. I don't have data that shows you promoted mediocrity with it.
Okay.
What you've done is tell people that they can be whatever they want to be and they can do anything they want to do. As long as they participate, they get a trophy. Well, unfortunately, that's not how life works. So there's a lot of us who have like overwhelming generalized anxiety that we can't actually be what we want to be and do what we want to do. But so there's that. I don't see the numbers that it promotes mediocrity. I think emotionally we think it does and it feels that way. But I don't see millennials as a mediocre generation by any stretch of the imagination. And we're the ones that had it as children. So I'll say that. And the other thing I'll say is that there's a lot of millennials, and I don't know if they still are. It's possible that Zs and alphas are too. But I'll say it, me. I was forced to participate in things in school that I hated. Like I was forced to do fun days is not physical exercise for a lot of us. Thank you so much.
Yes, I know.
Fun runs. That's a oxymoron for me. Yeah. I was forced to do those things. I'm not a sporty person. I will never be a sporty person. And so participation trophy was an insult. And all it made me do was think, I am never good enough for that. I will never be that. I never, ever want to do that again. But I was forced the next year to do it and get a participation trophy. So there's a lot of emotions around it. It started getting really criticized when millennials were in their 20s and not fully formed yet. Mm-hmm. And we were asking questions about the workplace that boomers did not want to answer. And so a lot of things just got pushed onto special snowflake participation ribbons. Yeah. And the data doesn't back it up.
It's interesting. I don't know. I just know that for some reason, the participation trophy, I'm pretty sure that somebody could make a whole TV series on participation trophies across generations.
It's very emotional. Yeah, it's very emotional. Yeah.
I gotcha. Conflict resolution, direct confrontation or mediated discussion?
Mediated discussion.
Yeah. Who does the mediation? Somebody who's in one of the siloed generations or someone who's outside of both of those generations?
It entirely depends on the situation. I can't answer that in good faith.
Okay. I'm just asking because I don't have a clue there on that one.
It would be, it's much more situational than that. But I mean, because my answer is the skill set's more important than the generation.
Okay. Workplace culture, how about hierarchical or flat organizational structure?
Screw you, because the answer is neither. Really? Neither one of them works.
Give me what you think works. I want to hear this one. Yes, for sure.
Collaborative within a hierarchy. So like there is somebody full, there are people directly in charge of certain things, but it's not a hierarchy in the sense of like you report to me and you don't talk to anybody else. And like, it's not hierarchy in the sense of military. Flat structures don't work either because somebody has to be in charge. Mm-hmm. Like somebody has to sign the checks. So it's a hybrid of the two things that is a collaboration within a defined but flexible hierarchy.
When you talk about military, that one I can never see working as a flat structure.
Never.
No. So hierarchy. Never.
And it shouldn't. People die. Like, I mean, even on a, like, I think, like, I'm, my husband and I watch Below Deck a lot, the Bravo series, which is about crews on luxury yachts. Uh-huh. And like hierarchy is really important there too, because like certain things have to happen on the boat to make sure everybody stays safe.
Okay.
That's not, and so like there are factory environments where hierarchy is important. Office environments in which we create ideas. Ideas are better done in collaboration. It's entirely possible that physical life, physical products, other things like that might need some hierarchy because we have to keep people safe around machinery, around weapons, around other things. But in an environment where you're trafficking in ideas only, that needs to be collaborative.
Cool. I think that was a good explanation. Intergenerational relations, mutual understanding, or agree to disagree?
Mutual understanding, because that can also be agree to disagree.
Okay. I like the way you've worked that together. Ethical dilemmas, utilitarianism, or let make it easier, greater good or duty-based?
Greater good.
Okay.
If you're going to make me black and white it like that, greater good.
Okay. Data privacy, individual control, or government regulation?
I would love to say individual control, but then that puts the power in the hands of the companies, and none of us actually have individual control because Apple owns everything. I don't know. Pass.
They own a lot, don't they? I'll let you take a pass on that.
Yeah, that one's complicated. Yeah.
Okay. Freedom of speech, absolute or with limitations?
With consequences.
It does have consequences. Both of them do, don't they?
Yeah, so absolute with consequences.
Okay. Empathy, inherited trait or learned skill?
Learned skill. It's not possible to inherit empathy in its totality. It's still a discipline that you need to work on and practice because it doesn't have anything to do with feelings or feeling what other people are feeling. Empathy is entirely about cultivating a mindset of understanding.
Yeah. You and I talked about the word, I think, empath. And that's not a word that you like to attribute to people necessarily.
No, I think it's unfair. Yeah.
Puts a lot of pressure on people.
It does. It does. Like using people as our like emotional sensing rods or something. It just feels really rude. So my colleague and I, Aaron and I, use highly sensitive person instead.
Yeah. Gotcha. Future of work. How about, is it human centric or AI augmented?
Please, Lord, let it be human centric.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with all the AI stuff coming out. There's so much every day, right?
It makes me grumpy.
Generational labels. Is it a helpful framework or stereotyping?
Yes. Stereotypes can be a helpful framework, but I'll go with helpful framework.
Okay. Global issues, local action, or international cooperation?
Local action leads to international cooperation.
Okay. So local action, start there. Start at the bottom.
Yeah, local action starts. Yeah, start at the bottom and build out. Yeah.
Okay. Last one. How about as far as social harmony, assimilation or multiculturalism?
Multiculturalism with actual respect instead of like covert assimilation, the way we have often treated multiculturalism in the States. No, I want actual celebrated multiculturalism with mutual respect.
It's interesting because we talk about DEI on the show a lot. And there's companies out there that they are absolutely for DEI during Pride Month and during
100%
Black History Month,
and during Black History Month during Women's History Month. And then when it comes to like following the Americans with Disabilities Act, gosh, do they have some feelings about that? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're trying to expand some minds. So we'll see how that goes, right?
We all gotta do our part.
I keep telling you I could talk to you forever because I love what you say and are doing. But other people need to be able to get in touch with you also. They can definitely reach out to you and find you at Abby Research. And for everyone that's listening instead of watching, Abby is spelled A-B-B-E-Y. It's Abby-Research .com. So that's one way to get in touch with you. They're also on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter X.
Twex, we'll just call it. Twex.
Twex. Yeah. And that's all at Abby Research. One word, A-B-B-E-Y, Research, R-E-S-E-A-R-C-H. And you've got your podcast, which is over at abby-research.com/podcast. So I've absolutely enjoyed this conversation. And I'm just
going to say, thank you so much.
That's what I'm going to do. how about this? How about that? And then for everyone that's going to catch keeping up with us, you can find us at afunnywayoflooking.com. We are all over the web and Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, at A Funny Way of Looking, just all one word. And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter. Everyone who's been on the show is going to have an article written about them, as well as the transcript for their broadcast that we did with them. So you can find them all over on afunnywayoflooking.news, N-E-W-S. It actually just leads you over to afunnywayoflooking.com, but that way I don't have to give you the funny URL, okay? And I'm just about to lose my voice, so I'm glad we're at the very end here.
Indeed.
And we're showing it, funnywayoflooking.news. Thank you very much, Kristen, for being on. I have really enjoyed this, and I appreciate it. So let's...
It's been an honor. Thank you so much.
Let's play some music and get out of here, and I'm going to rest my voice. Thank you, everybody. Okay.